three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From the beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Steph.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Joseph Corr is my name from Stats Perform Media. I'm joined by Andrew Canyon.
I'm the fan man in the can.
Fan man in the street in the sports media minnow. You know what? I see that on a t-shirt, but whatever. Thanks for joining us. We're off to game two of the NBL finals. Pretty lackluster to this point, but we'll get into that. We're going to talk about Mooney, Magne, Landale, game one and two. What's going to happen in game three and what, Ben Simmons?
Ben Simmons. We got the two grand finalists and their ownership situation.
Yes, good point.
A few signings.
Yep.
It's already, I feel like we're not even at the end of this season and we're already looking forward to next season, which is only a couple of months away.
I know that. I was about to ask you, when does the next season start? Do you have a date?
I don't have a date, but I think they're going to try and get back on cycle for like normal.
So that'd be normal October.
NBL. So yeah, September, October, I guess.
So that's four or five months.
I think I heard 3 months bandied around. I think that was between sort of end of season and then preseason or something.
Oh my god!
Buckle up.
We'll see how that goes. Yeah, exactly. Right. It's just straight back into the fire. I guess what other sort of house, front of house sort of stuff? I've got an interview with Paul Shirley about his book Ball Boy coming up. He was very candid, and we had a good chat about. I really like Paul's company. I think he's funny and his books are always great. And that one was no different. And, Chris Anstey comes up in that conversation. Rate and review on the Apple Podcast if you like the show. Yep.
You're going to be selling some of those books?
He has his own publishing house. So I'll certainly provide the links. And you can buy it through Booktopia, which is in the link. If you're going to buy a book, do it. We get 10% of the sales. So cha-ching. think about it. You buy a $50 book. It's a fucking fiver. Patreon. If you really like the show. Yeah, do support the show.
Yeah, I've got to say on Patreon, I take some responsibility for this too. I haven't provided a lot of additional bonus content on the Patreon.
If I can say to Patreon people, whoever the people we've got already, we appreciate you very much because it's just essentially a little way of saying, yeah, I support the show. That's really it. I wanted to do content for that. And this season has just been so helter-skelter that I haven't, and I apologize.
Yeah, look, if I was younger and more attractive, I might do an OnlyFans, but clearly I'm not. So, this seemed like the more civil approach to it.
Definitely. Let's jump into it. Let's do this. I want to start with a statement and then you can respond in turn. At the start of our last podcast, I said I had the Wildcats in four.
You did?
Now,
how are you feeling?
That's not going to happen. It's not even going to last four games, let alone Perth in four. But I do believe, I honestly believe to my heart of hearts, there was a blueprint for the Wildcats to win the series. I really believe that. They had the two games at the top of the series. It wasn't going to be easy, but they had the two games at the top of the series. They were going to have a long break between games two and three, and that's come to fruition, and that was going to help the Wildcats, I think. Just you get to have your two home games, potentially win those, and then you kind of got a long break to have a real stab at Melbourne United. I didn't anticipate that Travers and most importantly Steindl and Mitch Norton were going to go down and hurt. Do you agree with my assessment that there was a pretty decent blueprint for Perth to win the series, or you don't agree?
No, I do agree with that. I think it's just one too many injuries have just devastated the Wildcats. A real prime movers getting hurt like that. And I think the fact that you look at the results and the Wildcats have been in it, it's probably been their third quarters that have lost them the games in both. But beyond that, they've done well. I think they won every quarter in the first game except for the third. If this is Melbourne competing for a championship, they must be very thankful they're not playing in full strength Wildcats because they'd be getting pummeled.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I've got written here. United have won these two games by a combined 12 points. Reminder, this is a Wildcat team without Bryce Cotton. A Norton who's really, really hurt. He's played, and then no Steindl. And I put it in that order. Like obviously, Cotton would have made the most difference, then Norton, then Steindl. Travis is a good player, but he's below both of them. And you saw it in game one where Steindl came out shooting like crazy. And it's not so much the making the shots, it's the dependable, predictable offense that leads to kind of rebounds and less transition baskets, a whole bunch of things. But
yeah, you got to respect him. Even if he's missing him, you got to, you still got to show a hand to him. You can't leave him wide open. So freeze it up for everybody else.
Yeah, totally. And it gives Blansfield the chance occasionally to play that second option that he's more comfortable in. But I mean, I just thought the Wildcats at least would tinker with or certainly toy with leading the offensive rebounds, still the rebounds and the turnovers. I still thought they were going to control that area. What's funny is they've been in these games, but they haven't, and haven't really been very close to winning any of those, especially offensive rebounds. Melbourne United have decimated them in both games on the offensive rebounds, and I really don't have an explanation for it. I'm hoping maybe you do.
Not really an explanation other than that look, there's a few odd rebounds, kind of like, you know, fairly, you know, off the three ball, you know, long rebounds. Landau's very good at like not getting the rebound cleanly, but tapping it out. The sort of back tap to the guards. That's accounted for a handful of their offensive rebounds. He's really good at that. And Melbourne are just big. Like, Landau's so tall. And then you get Achul who comes in as well.
Lengthy and long.
Yeah. So I think they're just too big. Like both Mooney and Magna are smaller than both of those guys, Landau and Achul.
Achul looks like freakishly long out, just, yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. So for game one, I was sitting really close. I had really, really good seats just behind the Wildcat bench. And so you've got a really good sense of just how tall he is. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd be a legit 7 feet. He looks it on TV.
Yeah, and then his arms go up. Like, you can see why he gets so many of those little, like, jump hooks, little scoop shots. It's just, you can't stop it. His hands at the rim.
There was a time when he caught the ball in the low post. It could have been either game, probably both games, and just sort of took a dribble, turn, and faded on the baseline. And he was just leaning so far back and so such a high release. I was like, no one in the Wildcats can guard this. No one in the NBL can guard this. And this might sound really ridiculous, but his game, I feel like, is he an NBA? Is he an NBA shot? Like 7 feet tall, can shoot it, can't play defense, but needs to put on some size. But, I mean, what's the difference between JLA and Thon McCur, who got a chance a little while ago?
Yeah,
didn't go so spectacularly for him, but are we seeing a huge differential?
No, I don't think so.
I'd love to see those two on the court together. I mean, McCur has sort of a sweet run to Boomer squads and da-da-da, and JLA is this kind of, I don't know. I can't separate them, but maybe someone out there who watches more of their games can tell me. I want to ask you this question, Andrew Canyon. Are we under any illusions that this thing goes beyond three games? Is it going beyond Friday night?
It's really hard to see how it potentially may. Maybe the only – if the Wildcats get Steindl and Travis back and they come in with, you know, a real intent, you know, that
in Melbourne,
they might push it through one more game. I don't think the Wildcats fear Melbourne. In fact, they seem to play pretty well at that Melbourne venue. I think their shooting is pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think they've got any issues with that court. They won the NBL Cup there. So maybe you could mount a case for them winning the next one. But game four, done.
I think it's over in three. I don't think for a couple of reasons. One, odds are Steindl and Travers won't be there. And then just the fact of, like, once you pop, you can't stop. The lids, the can of Coke has been opened and cannot be closed. Like, Melbourne United now have this huge break. They go home. They're going to win the series. They can smell it, feel it. The Wildcats are like, do we want to delay this or do we just want to get back to Perth? There's even talk of, like, why wouldn't we just finish this off in Perth? You know, let's just get this over with. Just one to the head instead of a couple to the gut. So, I think Melbourne are going to win. I'd be betting Melbourne to win by 10, 15 plus. Like, just one of those real kind of – I think the Wildcats in game one and two have come close. You know where someone's about to start weeping and they do those little first little cries with like and then they just fall out. That's what's going to happen in game three. It's just going to be the gushing. I tried. And that's not to like poke fun at the Wildcats. This is what I think.
The Wildcats giving it their best shot. They've tried their hardest, but they just get overwhelmed each game. They get overwhelmed. The only thing they could do is maybe if they make all their free throws,
Oh, you put this up on Twitter. I think you said free throws or something. But
yeah, they probably would have won. They would have won game one if they'd made
it. Game one, certainly. And then if you win that game one, like, okay, now you got to win two in Melbourne. That's tough. But, yep. You know, more possible than winning three in Melbourne. That's just not going to happen. But I want to go back to game one, actually. How were the Wildcats in game one? They lost the O-boards, the rebounds in general, the turnover battle. Mitch Norton didn't play a heck of a lot. How did they lose that game by 3 points, only 3 points?
Yeah, and they weren't getting the rub of the green. I don't think they were being well looked after by the men in green. How did that? I don't know. It just, I think it was just all the little effort plays, I think. I'm trying to cast my mind back to that game now.
I have my own answer, but keep going, yeah.
Yeah, it was just intent and a will and to just stay with it. And then they had a couple of unsung heroes pop up. Kevin
Blanchfield.
Kevin White. Even Wani Swakalabulluk came in and got some.
There was a time in the first quarter. Sorry to interrupt, but there was a time in the first quarter where on the court was Kevin White, Shervil, Swakalabulluk, Bairstow, and Jervis.
There's your grand final lineup.
In the first quarter. Not like some dead time in the second quarter just before the half. Or in the first quarter. And I was like, wow, this is dire. This is dire.
Yeah. If Melbourne can't beat that, they got something wrong with them.
Oh, I agree. Well, my answer to this is Dean Vickerman played some wacky lineups and some wacky choices. McDaniel and Peatling. I haven't quite got their numbers from game one as opposed to game two, but I know in game two they played a combined 12 minutes. Well, they certainly played double that in game one. And he holstered Golding at some weird times. I can't remember exactly where, but like sometime in the third quarter, it was like kind of in the balance and Golding had just hit a shot. I was like, what are you playing at? This is bizarre.
Golding was impressive in both these games.
Oh, he was brilliant.
He would just come in and he was so in control.
Yeah,
really impressive stuff to see.
Confident too. We take shots at him. Well, do we take shots? We give our honest opinion to him, and we've never doubted his ability to make big shots. You know, do we doubt his ability to put it on the dribble and be a 25? You know, an import level scorer in the NBL. Yeah, we have those doubts about, but never late in shot clock. We need someone to cast it up there and make something out of nothing. No, that's his bread and butter.
And his shot is looking pure at the moment.
It goes down, it's just like it's like a skill tester above the rim, just like plop, just dropping it in the basket. Yeah. It's spectacular to watch. He's been fantastic. We'll talk about him in a second some more. But Blanchfield was as amazing in game one as he was neutralized in game two. My question for you, was it a result of the inconsistency we've seen throughout his career, or was he neutralized?
Oh, he was in game two. He was neutralized, but also he's not the kind of guy that you can rely on to give you 20 night in, night out. Like he's never shown
he's
that.
He's never been that guy, has he? No.
So I think you're right in when he's hot and you appreciate it, but you can't say we're going to build our offense around this guy because you can't. Bryce Cotton will still – he'll get that kind of coverage and he'll still somehow pop up and get 15 points.
Yeah.
Blanchfield just can't do that. Few can. It was just the priority of Melbourne was just like, we don't care. We're just going to shut Blanchfield down. And like, good luck anybody else trying to score enough to go with us.
Yeah, I think when they went into game two knowing, no Steindl. It's all Blanchfield.
Yeah.
Just not him, anyone but him. And they ran him off the line. They scragged him a fair bit. It was a little bit going on beyond the play, I thought, just a wee bit. Yep. Nothing where I'm like, cheating, anti-home cooking, whatever you want to call it these days. The other thing as well, simple answer, Uday Baba played 25 minutes in game two. He played less than half that in game one. He played 11. So when you put Uday Baba on guys, have a guess what happens. Like he's sort of got sort of NBA quicks on him. He kind of keeps up with people and runs them off the line. So simple equation, really. So yeah, I thought he was neutralized. I just thought Melbourne knew, no Steindl, Blanchfield, get him. And Blanchfield and combined it with Blanchfield's never been that number one guy, and it happened. Kevin White.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
Well, we had Dan Ewing, he's friend of the show, and is well known to Kevin White, and he's playing well. He's playing really well. He's hitting shots, and he's a little bit clumsy with the ball at times.
Yep.
But, gee, I mean, it's not the role he was born to play, but he's playing it. So I take my hat off to Kevin White, absolutely. What about you?
Absolutely. I mean, he's showing no fear, and he's just – Well, he's like, oh, screw it. If I don't shoot it, who is? So it must be a nice mentality in a sense. It's like, well, it's not like I'm not passing the ball to Bryce Cotton to take this shot. So why not take it? And it's coming out of his hand nice. It's going through. Talked about Chris Goulding, you know, splashing them. They're going through the net just as efficiently as Goulding's shots. They're beautiful. Yeah. Perfect.
And then the other thing, he's under acute pressure because if Norton had been healthy, there would have been a lot more of those two playing together. And I feel like they would have been quite serviceable, but he's just had to shoulder a burden that he was not meant to do. But he's been playing well. No doubt.
And they're putting a fair bit of pressure on him when he's bringing the ball up. And like you said, he's a bit clumsy at times, but you know, he's going up against, you know, Hobson's really trying to shake him.
Hobson's on him, Barber's on him occasionally, Illy, McCarron. Like, there's no let up. There's not now I've got, you know, whoever in front of me guarding me. Now it's not like that. Let's talk about the bigs.
Yeah.
John Mooney, Landau, Magnate. Let's start with John Mooney. Numbers are down a little bit. Aggressiveness is down a little bit. Have you seen his game?
Well, tell me what you think, but I just think he's suffering because he's not getting those easy looks courtesy of Bryce Cotton. I also find he's not really – he's working the post and then just kicking it out. He's not finishing his post moves with any great vigor. Sort of Ben Simmons to it, you know? He's like, he'll pull a move and then pass it off.
I think a couple of things. One, you know, huge role change late in the season. You know, it's like the rug's been pulled out from underneath him. So that's number one. He doesn't get anything easy. Also, he's a bad matchup for Landau. You know, he's just that little bit small for him. But I think he's looking a little bit robotic too. I think he's thinking too much of like the flex will save us. We'll play that. It's like, no, John Mooney, you got to kind of face the rim. If you've got a lane, you got to take it. You got to, you know, and that's difficult being a first-year player. He's not used to being like, oh, okay, I'm an import. They're paying me big money, presumably. I need to score here. I need to kind of go outside the offense just a little bit. He's still in that college mind frame of I've got to make this handoff at the free throw line extended. So, and then also, you know, he's playing against Landau, who's a really good player.
Really good. So, yeah.
But he's been kept off the boards. Yeah, he's struggling a little bit.
They really need to change the map. Like, they need to get him playing on Pete Ling or whoever as much as possible and let Magnay handle Landau just for the size. Matchup, but Magnate.
Yeah, let's go Magnate. What do you think?
I mean, he's still a bit foul prone.
Proper looks clumsy is what I've got written here.
Yeah,
very clumsy.
Yep.
On O, on D, like the hands haven't been great. He's had flippers. Flippers. Yeah, I don't know what else to say.
And the one time he tried to do something aggressive, he tried to throw down that big jam. And totally unnecessary. Like, he had an easy, just a little chippy layup. And he tried to throw it down and it's like, don't do that. This is a grand final, man. Like, if you be sure of the points, need to go for the spectacular play. And it's just like, it just sort of summed it up. Just like, it's like he's just trying too much all the time and it's just not coming together.
I have a sympathy for him. You know, really bad exit in Brisbane, really bad. Quarantine, comes into a new team, barely plays the 7 games to make it, right? Barely plays. Flex offense, probably not the easiest to memorize, and not a team that you can just go outside of it. And, you know, it's not like Gleason is comfortable with guys going outside that. So I have a sympathy for him, but yeah, he's looked clumsy just on the face of it. And yeah, hasn't been huge on the boards. You know, there's rebounding on defense. There's no flex offense to learn. You either go and get it or you don't.
What do you think about Magnus as well? Like, so I think we may have a tendency to exaggerate in our minds just what he was doing last year. Like, he had a couple of big games where he knocking down threes and blocking shots. I remember one game in particular where he just
It was a blitz. I think it was in Sydney, I want to say, where they came back from 20 down or something. Yeah,
but overall, I mean, what was he averaging? Maybe 10 points.
Yeah, 10 points.
You know,
yeah.
Like probably 6 boards or something. I don't know. I'm just guessing, but you know, from memory, He wasn't a game-changing player. He was a development – it was almost like he was a development player / rookie that came good.
Yeah, right.
And then was suddenly it was this big talk, you know, he's a potential NBA guy. He wasn't an NBA lock, you know. It wasn't like he was a superstar.
No.
And I think maybe it's easy for us to think, he should be a superstar when he's never really – demonstrated the potential to be one. rather than actually being one.
I was high on him because I was really looking forward to seeing him play with Cotton. And, yeah. You know, imagine Magne just kind of sitting in the dunker spot where Cotton draws a double team, 1-2 pass, dunker from the yep. bird box, you know. Yep. So that hasn't happened for him. And then, you know, the ankle injury, I don't know how big or bad that was, but, you know, kept him out for a long time, took him back from the US. So it must have been something pretty serious. But, yeah, again, like this, the NBA, its fringe players are losing their polish. Like Deng Adel, very modest. Who else is coming? Oh, Sloan. Remember him?
Yeah.
Seems like a lifetime ago, but came over. It wasn't much, or at least didn't assert himself over that team and organization. But so, yeah, Magne, I don't know. But I think it would have been a big piece with Cotton.
Let me ask you a question about Jock Landau.
Mm-hmm.
What's your impression of him being in this series?
He's been pretty high percentage. Like he hits a lot. He takes three pointers and they don't miss. He is a genuine stretch threat. And he's got good hands and he's banging around a little bit. You know, he doesn't mind a bit of a barge and a bit of a niggle, but for the most part, he's been pretty locked in. Draws a double team every time. You know, Chris Golding's not what he is without Landau. Guys are always coming off him a bit. I think he's been good. I don't know. He hasn't been MVP, but pretty damn close.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think similarly. I think he's been so good. I think he lets himself down with some of his demeanor, his attitude, and some of the choices he got in terms of the way he plays some defense. I think people accuse Wagstaff of flopping. I mean, Landau's flopping around a bit.
Yeah, he had that one bad flop that I hated. Was that in the post? I think it was Magne.
And he's just always a bit.
But in his defense, if you get rewarded for flopping.
Yeah, you know, I know. Maybe it's not on him, right? It's on the refs to call it correctly.
It's on both.
But I don't know. I don't like the way he carries himself.
Well, you're getting too much of it, but you're getting a Bogut vibe.
Yeah.
Bit of a Bogut veneer on him? Is that
what you think? Probably a bit of that. It's cruel to say it, but that dickhead attitude.
Okay. You know, as in like kind of smarmy or mean-spirited, rude? Is that what you mean?
No, more the like up yours, like enjoying being the bad guy. Maybe a bit of the Shane Heels about
it. Okay. This iceberg town, screw you people type thing. I get that vibe from him.
Yeah, yeah. So he's sort of Shane Heel, Simon Curl, you know, to go back. Yeah, I'm trying to think of some of the characters we used to have. That kind of guy is just like, God, I hate you so much. You know, that kind of.
But I will say this. I think to win in Perth, it requires it. There's no surprise that him and Golding have been the two constants. But then again, Barber does it. Barber's been great. When he's got the minutes, but I thought Barber was fantastic. He was so quick up the floor. And when you're playing the Wildcats in Perth, you need to get a rebound and go quick. And he got like these three or four just breakout layups. One was a dunk. One he got fouled on. Like no one could keep up with him. And I just thought the combination of Golding really not afraid of that crowd. Landau, I think his persona is a little bit manufactured, but still playing a part pretty well. And then Barber being so quick. It's tough. Is there any debate that Chris Golding's finals MVP?
No.
I'll just say no.
I've got him as my MVP.
What if Landau came out and had like 30 and 10 in the next? That was clearly the best player in the next game.
Yeah, he might. Because he did get 17 boards in the last game. So he hasn't been playing badly. And he's created those looks for Golding. So, look, if he comes out and does really, really well. But I just think Golding's been the game breaker. And just every time the Wildcats thought they were in with a sniff, he's just come in and stomped it.
Yeah, agreed. Are we in any doubt that with Cotton, the Wildcats would have won this series?
I think it's clearly. Cotton scores more than 7 or 8 points.
And just to say to everyone, Andrew is in Perth. I'm not a Wildcat fan. And I just think categorically there's just no doubt with Cotton this team wins.
Yeah.
No doubt in how – and with health, obviously. If Norton – healthy Wildcats win this series.
To be fair, you could say, well, Melbourne are without Jack White. But it's a bit different. He's a rookie. He's also been gone for a long time. Didn't they replace him with David Barlow? I mean, not David Barlow.
David Anderson.
David Anderson, you know.
Here's another question. Is David Anderson going to get a minute in this series?
I hope so. I want to see that dream shake, David Anderson baseline, pivot, head fake,
oh, dear.
That'll make my grand final series.
I want to give a criticism of United, right? And they've been playing great and they're going to win the series. And not an asterisk. Body wrote a good article about this. There is no asterisk. They survived this season. This was always we spoke about this at the start of the year. Two schoolboys, the bear is in front of them. One's tying the shoelaces. What are you doing? Are you crazy? You'll never outrun the bear. You're not trying to outrun the bear. You're trying to outrun the other kid. And Melbourne have outrun the other kid. They had a healthy schedule to help them, but I'm not going to be one of those people who's jumping on that. I think they rostered their team to have a little bit more depth and has worked out well for them.
And look, the Wildcats got a lot of their wins on the back of other teams having injured players, you know, so that helped them get to their second ranking in the, so, you know, it just is what it is. And you might, it's unfortunate from a viewing perspective because you want to see the best go at it.
Yeah, very. But
this is why you have a squad, you know.
I have a criticism of United. I want to level at them. And I think this is why we talked about it. They've only won these two games by a combined 12 points over a team that's half strength. A little while ago, I had a writer and reporter by the name of Ian Thompson on the podcast. He wrote this book called The Soul of Basketball about LeBron James changing teams from Cleveland to Miami, the decision and all that, and ultimately losing in the NBA Finals. I feel like United somewhat fly in the face of basketball, as Ian Thompson would describe it in that book. Instead of embracing that sort of what he would describe as the jazz improvisational spirit of basketball, I feel like United play a sort of clicky Australian style, and the new players work around that Australian core, that Boomer and Boomer B little club that they've got going on. This is quite a criticism, but I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah.
They should be soaking the Wildcats. Right, this half strength, they should be beating them up by 10, 20 points. And every game's a little bit of a struggle for them because they just don't, I don't see them playing with that imagination and fantasy. McCarron is a guy who can really flow across the floor. He's like a yo-yo. Like whenever he's involved in the play, like he did a play late in the game where he was like jumping out of bounds and threw it back in and off guy. And I was like, this guy can do a bit of everything. He can dunk the ball. We haven't seen him dunk the ball.
No.
You know, and go at the rack hard. He can shoot pretty well. He can pull up at the foul line. I just haven't seen him play with any fantasy. And that's why his point tallies have been, you know, 4, 5, 6 points. He hasn't scored double digits in the series.
Yeah.
I just don't – game two felt like the first time in patches that they really embraced having fun with the game. And that was when McDaniel and Peatling, who are part of that sort of Australian clicky contingent, that's when they played a combined 12 minutes, half of what they played in game one. And the real spirit of this team, McCarron, Golding, Hobson, Barlow, Landau, Barber, and Illy, like shone through. And when they were on the court, you're like, oh my God, this team is just gonna, you know, weave its magic and blow this team out. And it was almost kept in reserve, not just in the series, but kind of all season. So that's a pretty lengthy criticism of United. But as a viewer, aesthetically watching these games, that's how I feel. What do you think?
Oh, I'll just let that comment stand. I don't really know what to say about it. No, I don't know. I'm just going to leave it. Sorry, man. Sorry.
No, I got a question for you. Aesthetically.
Yep.
Your thoughts on the series. Let's say you're new to basketball and you flip over this series, you know, like, oh, let's have a look at this. Whoa.
No, it's not good.
Aesthetically, it's low scoring. It's trudgy. Yeah. It's a walk through mud.
Yeah.
But I'll say this. Is this not the most fitting end to the season we've had? Medically plagued and deflating, or am I being too cynical and critical?
No, that's very good.
And it's not just because the Wildcats. I think even a United fan would be like, oh, I haven't had fun with these games.
Do you know what?
Golding has been the one bit of fun. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, the one thing I appreciate is that you just see these outmatched, outclassed Wildcat players.
Yeah.
And they're just giving it. They're still just giving it their all, you know, and I really, really respect that. Like, I mean, Jared Bairstow wasn't playing in the NBL, you know, like Kevin White had been chased out of Adelaide. you know, like Wani Swakalabulluk had some success in like an under-19s team or something. Like, these are not household names by any stretch. And here they are in a grand final and they're just trying, and you just see they don't have that talent
and hanging around, man. Like, it's not like it's just some sort of bullish do it for the dipper, do it for the gipper, one of the two, you know, that kind of effort. Like, hey, give it spirit, boys. Like, this is a genuine, they're like following the scout, you know, doing as best they can. But, you know, Golding's just cracked through a few times. Mitch Norton, I think he's really gone up in my estimation. I used to think he was a real kind of, you know, come down, socks up to the knees, you know, throw up a few fingers, point guard, real black and white point guard.
No, he's really tough, and he can attack the basket well. And when he's been able to muster some sort of engine, he's able to get to the hoop, and he looks quick. And but then it's just the tank goes straight down to empty. You know, it's petrol light after one drive.
I just think that Melbourne will win this. They'll win the title, but they won't win any bragging rights. There is no bragging rights in this victory.
I think this season, I think a lot of them will be like, "Yep, season's done. Put it away. Let's just go home."
Yeah,
I feel like that. And then the worst part is they go home and there's still restrictions and it's still not a great time for Victoria. Yeah. So it's just so deflating. I don't want to talk.
There's no end of season trip to look forward
exactly.
to.
No, exactly. You can't. And then the Wildcats, poor things, are probably going to get locked out coming back.
Yeah, they've got 2 weeks of quarantine to look forward to.
Oh, my God. Would they just forfeit? Would they just go, you know what? No, we're not reporting to we're not doing it. We're going to stay here. We're going out to Broome or something. Screw you. Let's jump off the series. We'll do a media. We'll do a wrap at the end of game three. The Wildcats changing hands. This is a big story.
Yeah,
this is
Lockie Reid breaking the story.
Love Lockie Reid. Really energetic guy. So for people who don't know, the Wildcats looks as though it's a done deal. I think I saw a news report today again. Lockie Reid. That's getting to the end game of negotiations. So Craig Hutchison of Croc Media and SEN. I think Croc Media may have changed names. But
yeah, anyway, it did. Yeah. It used to be Croc Media. Now it's SEN. Yep.
SEN. So SEN. And he's a minority owner of Melbourne United. Might even be a majority owner. Not too sure.
I think 25% maybe.
Okay. There you go.
I think that's, I heard that. Yep.
Quarter of it. Binder the Wildcats. Do you know anyone else, Andrew Kane, who's bought in to this consortium?
No, I don't know. No, I only know what Lockie Reid has reported. Unfortunately, I don't have the level of access that would permit me to find out and then leak this information. So, no, I only know what Lockie's got.
Your reaction?
Oh, immediate disappointment and almost disgust. I'm like, geez, Jack Bendit must be near death and like wanting to get this sorted out before he passes to the other side, because it doesn't pass any of the sniff tests about what the Wildcats have talked about over the last few years. Doesn't make sense to me at all.
You feel this is like a last option on the table, and Bendit's like, I have to get my will and testament prepared.
Yeah,
is that what you're
saying? Yep. And the only thing I can hope for, right, is that the way that Jack Bendit, he's pretty old now, but he was an unscrupulous businessman.
Yeah.
He was tough.
In the old school. Yeah. I think he made his money doing what? Real estate?
Real estate and like shopping center real estate and all that was where it all started, I think. But nobody got the better of him, right? So I only hope that he has got enough lawyerly clout behind him to structure this deal in such a way that basically it's like almost within, there's covenants around it in terms of this is the way you have to manage and run this organization,
right?
You know, whether it's in perpetuity or something, because he's always been so strong about this has to be a Western Australian team, has to have really strong ethos and culture. And that's been what he's been building for the last 15 years or whatever. I can't imagine him, after pouring this much money and his own passion, because it is his passion. Why would you just want that to get whittled? I think that's his legacy. I think he's big on legacy. He's sponsored, you know, hospitals and that kind of thing, got his name on hospital buildings. He's given away a lot of money. I think he's looking for legacy. And I think, how do you protect that legacy? And if you look at Hutchison, he's not.
What vibe do you get off him? Not a good one.
Not a good one. Not a good one at all.
What do you think it does, the idea of Hutchison now owning parts of two teams? Now, I don't know how much of the Wildcats he's bought into, but the idea that a guy's got two of the biggest teams, right? These are the perennial grand finalists the last, what, however many years. It's an interesting little thing. I just look at it this way, right? Bendit has run the team like a billionaire, right? He's run it like a community garden. It's basically been non-for-profit, and he doesn't care.
Yeah.
If this new consortium has any aspiration to make it financially A, profitable, or B, viable, the first thing they're going to do is cut wages.
Yep.
And, you know, that means, maybe that doesn't mean Cotton leaves, but, you know, he's not cheap. He's on 600,000 plus. And then you've got others, you know, maybe
whatever else. You know, once you cut the wages out of the Wildcats, they're not as good a team. It's just that simple. Yeah. But,
and it's not even players' wages. It's all the support staff and physios.
It's all that stuff that make them professional. And, you know, people talk about Wildcat basketball, and there's a great culture there. But when you start trimming the fat, you know, you don't grow as big and as good, you know. And I think, you know, look at how Vlahov and Longley, neither of those two guys, well, Longley in particular, was short for cash. They just didn't run the team as well.
No.
Because, you know, this is a business first. You know, Jack Bendat ran the business of it and got this thing as profitable as a basketball team as you can.
And could sustain losses in doing it.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think it's a real worry for the Wildcats. But I'll ask you this then. Let's say the Wildcats do return to the field. Is that bad for the NBL? Where you haven't just got this one behemoth out west who just cannibalizes good players, money, every grand final. It's been an interesting time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you say like league parity is always good, but I don't think the Wildcats, in terms of they've won a lot of championships, but they haven't really ever been way over and above in terms of competitiveness. Like, I don't think. I mean, winning the title has never been easy.
They do have Bryce Cotton on their team. This is a guy who...
That's just luck, though. Like, Brisbane had Leroy Loggins, you know?
They pay him a plenty. He gets paid a lot.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but I think in this day and age, it doesn't happen. Leroy doesn't play in the NBL now. He's a lefty who can defend. He's in the NBA. He was... A gap in scouting made him fall out. And I think Cotton turned down NBA offers. You know, they pay Cotton very, very handsomely. And but the thing is as well, like you say, league parity is good for the league. However, I mean, if you just look at the past, like when this league was at its, when the Wildcats were bad, this league was bad. You know, this league has never been worse than when the Wildcats weren't making consistent, you know, deep in the grand final.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not saying that would recur itself, but, you know, that is the precedent. So,
but also, you talk about owning a portion of two leagues in a, what will it be, 10 team season from next year.
Yeah. Two teams,
like that's too much, you know. And what sort of dodginess can occur then? Like, oh, we're just going to transfer Bryce Cotton to Melbourne United. You know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's just too – and it just leads to – it's the same thing as the Kesselman situation, owning parts of teams. He may do nothing with that ownership, but it opens an avenue of questioning, and it just corrupts the perception of the league.
What do you think Hutchinson sees in the NBL? Like, what does he want? What does anyone want it for? I mean, I look at the history of the league and I look, it's 42 years without TV, without really good or even a commercial success on the whole. Like, maybe some team, you know, Perth has run a bit of a hot streak, but if you combined all the teams at any one time, never has the league made money, and it's never been on television. And never really come close. Oh, well, sorry, it was on Channel 10 for a short while, and only as soon as it was off. So I'm kind of like, what does he want in it? What does he want in two teams? I just don't get it.
I know. The only thing I can think is that, I mean, he's got sports media, you know, so he needs content, right? So you need competitions and things to be happening to be able to broadcast them and talk about them and print magazines or whatever else that media station does, you know. But I think Croc Media or SEN does. They've got all the radio stuff that talks NBL.
Yes.
I think they produce the NBL Overtime show.
They do.
And I'm sure they've got a fairly large finger in just the overall NBL production.
I suppose that's right. I mean, they have the infrastructure to talk about anything. They don't have to, you know, invest any more capital. They can just straight away, we've got microphones, we're ready to talk about something. What can we get to talk about? But very interesting. Sport in this country is always been an odd financial pursuit. So we'll see how it goes.
Be interesting to watch. I sense it a bit of an upsetness amongst the Red Army though about this. Not that that'll change anything, but you know, I wonder if they would have predicted it. The ownership of the Wildcats would have predicted this sort of already sort of blowback or negativity.
I've heard memberships getting turned in. I've seen flags burnt. No, I've seen flags burnt. But, you know, it's been a bit of vitriol pretty quick.
Yep.
Good luck, Wildcat fans. You're going to need it. Ben Simmons, is that where we're ending off, or we got something more about NBL stuff?
Just NBL signings, just really quickly.
Oh, yeah, do it. Sorry.
Kyle Adnam, 2 years, back with the Phoenix. Good for him. Bad for Liafa.
Yeah, well, you'd think if you were Tommy Greer and you had Liafa's contract and you had Kyle Adams, who would you take?
I would have taken Liafa.
Same.
Yeah.
I think Kyle Adams has that.
Probably him cheaper.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I thought Kyle Adams has that Southeast Melbourne connection and marketability and all that sort of stuff, and I don't know what the numbers are, but on pure play, I would have gone with the DP. I would have said, yeah, we'll take a chance on him.
But I presume Gibson's finishing up.
Well, I was going to ask, yeah, so Gibson didn't play in their series, so you would think he's going to become a coach or something like that.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is Jesse Wagstaff going to go around again?
He shouldn't. Oh my goodness, he looks cooked. Yeah.
He just cannot get off the floor. He's missing layups. He's missing shots. Oh, yeah, he missed that game. He missed that three-pointer to win there.
Yeah, yeah. And he missed another layup.
Yeah, he missed another layup. Crucial layup.
And just, he just looks great. He just looks groundbound.
Groundbound. I like that. Yeah.
He's never been a leaper, but he just looks slow and old now. I'd pick David Barlow over Jesse Wagstaff.
Barlow looks good.
Barlow's knocking down triples.
And is big and can hold his ground. Yeah, Wagstaff, I think, it might be the last one.
Hang him up.
Yeah, I think. The other one I want to talk about is Brad Newley. The Kings have said no thanks. Did we talk about this?
Did they?
Yeah, the Kings have come out and said no, not for us. And so Brad Newley's thinking about maybe going to Adelaide. Yeah.
How did I miss that entirely? Wow.
Wow. I saw it a little while ago. But, yeah, I mean, that really surprised me. We talked about the sort of Hobbit Smog, Boomers connection. Paul Smith, just love to acquire them. So I was surprised to see it. And, you know, does Brad Newley now want to get up for a fleeting year of NBL, get up and move to Adelaide, get up and move to Melbourne, get up and move to, you know, wherever? I don't know him personally, but I'd just be like, oh, geez. I remember Alan Ballinger, I had him on the podcast ages ago when I first started doing this.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, you know, I got a contract from, I think he said, a team in Melbourne. He's like, but I didn't want to have to learn a new offense and move house. And I get that. I totally get that. And if you're Brad Newley, there comes a time where you're like, oh, I don't want to go to the supermarket and ask for boxes again. Screw this. So I don't know. I think, I thought Brad Newley, Sydney was him, but hey, he might surprise you. So.
And I would appreciate that sort of storyline of him going back to Adelaide where it all began.
Kind of cool.
The only thing about that is then he would have to be coached by Connor Henry.
No.
And would you really do that to yourself in your final year of your career? Yeah. Like, oh, I'm going to be with this Muppet. Like,
You'd have to be.
I'm too old for this. I'm too old for this shit. Why would you do it?
Yeah, I know. I don't. I think maybe Illawarra, you know, you can just sort of skip down there. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens. The other one was Mitch Creek, right? Mitch Creek.
Yeah, he's back. No real surprise.
No surprise at all. They had to get him back. He played great. He's a good player. It'd be interesting to see what that team does. I think the team's got a nice structure. I think an upgrade on Ben Moore and you're looking pretty good.
Yeah. Yep. I think
need defense. And get Dane Pinot back. Even if you don't upgrade on Moore and get a similar player, but get Dane Pinot back, I think that's a better team. But they just need that little bit of anchoring on the defense. But
yeah. Yep. That's really all the player moving. So So Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons. Did you watch the games?
No, I didn't. I just followed I'm just so disengaged with the NBA this season.
I understand that.
I read a couple of reports because
this is good. Which is good. We've got your perspective. This is good. We've got your perspective. You didn't watch the game. I did watch the game. I covered it and watched and covered most of the games of the series. So this is good. We get your perspective of mind. You were saying.
Yeah, so I was just saying, you know, obviously it created such a stir that I sort of read a couple of the game reports and stuff, and it's just like, it's just tragic, really. It's like a guy who, and then he had Shaq paying out on him and everything. I was like, oh God, the real pile-on is happening at this point now. But it seems like it's the same old story that he's just never shown any improvement.
Let me give you the numbers.
It's so infuriating that a guy do you want to know how many millions I'm getting paid?
Yeah.
Millions, right? I'm getting paid millions and I can knock down free throws right now. Or I haven't gone to a court in a while now.
You'll hit 7 to 10.
I'll hit 70%, okay?
Oh, of course you would.
Bank it in 70%.
And if you didn't, you'd feel – you'd just –
I'd be upset. I'd shoot another 10. I'd be
you'd
like –
you'd be embarrassed. Listen to these numbers. I want to give you the numbers here. So he was 3 from 3 from the field in all four quarters in the series combined. He was 0 of 0, did not attempt a field goal in games 4, 5, 6, and 7 in the fourth quarter. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just, not a single attempt. Wow.
It reminds me of that time when LeBron just lost all confidence and kind of
that finals
faded away.
I've got a question for you, and I watched the game, but I want to just put this question out to people listening. Were we witnessing a sporting misadventure or a mental health crisis play out on the court? I thought this is beyond basketball at this point. This is anxiety, maybe depression. I don't know. I'm pathologizing a little bit too much, but it didn't become sport for me or basketball. It became just something else.
Sad.
I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
It'd be hard not to take a shot in a quarter of NBA basketball,
at his height and size. And yeah, it would be difficult. And he had to like sort of, you know how the same way like a drug addict lies about their thing, they hide things and they steal. He had to manufacture false positions on the court for himself not to be involved offensively. It was so inorganic everywhere he moved. I've never seen anything
like it. Weak side. I'm taking the weak side.
Yeah. And not hiding in the box and not pushing it on the break and looking up and looking at the sort of how many the foul count to make sure it wasn't in the bonus. I've never seen anything like it ever. And I've watched a fair bit of basketball in my time. Jeez. Joel Embiid's comments. I didn't like Joel Embiid's game either. He had good numbers, but
I've never rated him.
Why not, Andrew Ken?
Well, he's huge. He's a big player.
Yeah, big guy.
Who would seem to much prefer playing outside the three-point line, which I guess is the modern game in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But slow.
Plodding, yeah.
Plodding. Just always – he always looks injured even when he isn't, but I know he's injured a lot.
He moves injured, yeah. The hips don't
– yeah.
I totally agree with that assessment.
He's not a guy. If I was building a franchise, I just wouldn't – Trust myself. Nah.
Totally. Well, he's missed a lot of games. Shit, he missed the first 2 or 3 years of his career. He missed games this year. He had a meniscus. Yeah, there's that.
Do you remember way back when Kevin Durant was coming out?
Yes.
It was the draft. It was he and what's his name? The big guy that was – it was like who's number one draft pick?
Oh, Greg Oden.
Greg Oden, yeah. Yeah, so that's – I get the Greg Oden vibes from
Embiid. I see that. I mean, he had that spin move because – Embiid's comments, I don't know if you saw this, but he came out and said, like, listen, the turning point in the game was when Simmons gave off a certain dunk for a layup to Matisse Thybul, which he then went to the line, missed one free throw.
Yep.
I thought that was a despicable comment from him. I really dislike Joel Embiid as a character. And Joel Embiid had the game, I think they were down 4, maybe 3 late, and he tried to drive the lane, drove into the middle lane, did a spin move and just totally left the ball behind. Guy picked it up,
Gallinari, and dunked it. Yep.
And I just couldn't believe – I was like, that is so amateur. And he was more interested in going at refs and the players than winning this one. But looking beyond the games, man, the process – like people are like, oh, the process hasn't worked. You know, they had their big campaign in Philadelphia about the process and whatever else. The idea of tanking to draft good players is not – unique to them. They just came up with a good branding for it, right? I look at all the great players, like Orlando made the, because they sort of were a new team and got Shaq and then sort of Penny and got lucky with that. And, you know, Tim Duncan wasn't traded for, he was drafted. Jordan was drafted, you know, a lot of great players are drafted. You know, the Lakers operate in a different universe, but for the most part, they just came up with good branding.
Mm.
They signed these guys to big contracts. Anyway, we're becoming very NBA-centric at the minute, but they just scouted the wrong people. Like Joel Embiid, they paid big money for. He's got a bad attitude, bad work ethic. They let Jimmy Butler go, who was a real kind of, take-it-on-himself scorer. They put in the wrong coaches. Brett Brown was a puppet and Doc Rivers is a choke artist. So I'm making excuses for Ben Simmons, but I feel like it's warranted. Let's talk about him with the Boomers, though. This is what's bothering me. People saying that playing for the Boomers is like the ultimate salve for all of Ben Simmons's basketball worries. Are you in that camp? What do you think about people saying that?
You know, I think I saw you tweet. You had some funny tweets on this, didn't you?
I enjoyed
your material on this one. I reckon if... For the generation of Australian players who are in that culture and have been doing it for the last 10 years, totally they are bought into it, right? Ben Simmons has never experienced that. So he doesn't know. So I don't blame him for going like, yeah, whatever, like I'm not that keen, because he doesn't know what it is, right?
Sorry to interrupt you. Is there a bit of bad blood with the old man? Like was he ever in the squad, got cut, could have been that naturalized player? I doubt it.
I don't think so. He was not that good. Yeah.
No, he wasn't, no.
I don't think there's anything like that going on.
But sorry, you were saying about.
So no, I just think maybe he just doesn't value it in the same way because he hasn't experienced it. And maybe his just mindset is not that enamored with, like, doesn't buy into the Boomers world. Now, in terms of would it be better for his game to play or train? I think it would be better for his mentality to play, like his mindset and his mental health.
Why do you say that?
I think being around people, like not playing for money, just getting your mind off that NBA. There's a lot of NBA is a dog eat dog world, right?
Well, and also a world to itself, very insular. Like there's not a great deal of perspective in the NBA. It's not a philosopher's league. It's not Renaissance. No offense to the NBA guys, but they're not Renaissance men. You know, they're not.
Get away from the guys who are, you know, stabbing you in the back and wanting you to fail so they can get more minutes or, you know, the next contract and who you trade bait for who. Just get away from all that and get back to playing the sport for like fun, if you want to call it that, like,
that's
and be with people who
it.
Just got the your own. They want you to succeed because that helps them succeed, and there's nothing else to it. And I think that would be really healthy. So that would be my answer for mental health. From an actual getting better as a player, I would have previously said no, it's better to just go ahead and play because playing games will make you better. The most. I've actually just been reading a book by Cal Newport.
Okay.
It's like so good they can't ignore you. And he makes an argument that you need to put in the he was talking about chess games and stuff, but basically evidence shows that if you practice a lot of chess and practice the moves and do all that, you'll be a better chess player than if you play a lot of tournaments. So I'm going to take that one data point and say he'll get better if he just trains.
Well,
trains.
Here's what I'd say. The idea that playing with the boomers, like, and can I just make this absolute point? I think I tweeted this, but I'll say it again. The Olympics isn't amateur anymore. And while you're very right when you say, oh, there is, you know, a culture of getting in there, there is absolutely, but there's the same jealousies within the boomers. Now, it may not be as elevated as the NBA, but there's the same jealousies, the same cliques, the same infights. It's a family, and no family is perfect. And, you know, I look at the guys who played, right? Mills, Baines, Bogut, Kay, and Dellavedova. They were the guys who kind of, who were sort of NBA-ish and played last with the boomers at the FIBA World Cup. Well, Mills kind of regressed a little bit. He didn't have a great year. He had an okay year, but not great. Baines totally regressed.
Bogut retired. That was his fault, though.
That's true. True. Good point. Nick Kay, went to Europe, had a pretty good year. And Dellavedova got hurt. So, you know, and it hasn't done a heck of a lot. It's done a lot for, I guess, Golding had a better year. Creek probably had a down year. Hard to say. Who else was on? Who popped from that team? Cam Glidden. Didn't do Cam Glidden the world good. Jeepers creepers.
No,
did Sobey.
Sobey.
So there's a bit of a history there. It's back and forth, but, you know.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is this. It's like, oh, go and play for the boomers. Go and play at the Olympics. Well, this is not your usual Olympics.
True as well.
It's like, oh, you just got eliminated. Yeah. Can you be in Las Vegas on Thursday? Not a couple of months break. Not think about it. Not whatever. Yeah, we need you there in 3 days' time.
Yep.
Whew, that's very different.
To go play in a stadium with 2,000 Japanese people who can't cheer they can only clap.
Well, that's if they're even there. And don't forget, Tokyo's been like, we don't want the games.
No.
But the IOC, and I've been on my high horse about the IOC for a long time. I think the Olympics is ridiculous. I've never understood the fanfare behind it. I think the IOC is as corrupt as FIFA and one of the more corrupt organizations on the planet.
Yep.
And the deal is there's a $1 billion TV deal signed that's exclusive rights to the IOC. That's why the Olympics are going ahead. Tokyo, if they could cancel them tomorrow, would. They don't want to do it. Doesn't make the Olympics don't really make your money. They're actually quite an expensive enterprise for the home team. But so that's the issue. And you know, and everyone's like, oh, I'll go and play with Mills and Baines and Ingles. And they're good players and presumably good people. Never met them. Maybe they're assholes. I don't know. But the thing as well is like, they're not in the Ben Simmons orbit. You know, Mills is a bench player.
Yeah.
Ingles played 15 minutes in game 7 and is a good player and is a starter for the most year, but he's not Ben Simmons. He's not an all-star. You know, so it's easier for those guys to be loyal and committed to the boomers where they're, you know, the star player to where Ben Simmons is like, oh, I got to pick this up again.
Yeah.
I got to wear this all over again. There's no role player-y break for Ben Simmons. So I can actually sympathize with that. And then also these Olympics are going to be lame, as we kind of touched on.
Yeah.
The village is in lockdown, no crowds. Tokyo don't even want it there. It's a risk to your COVID health. I don't know if Simmons has had the vaccine or has had COVID already, but yeah, it's another risk of that.
Yep.
And, but you know, if you want to get better in a tournament, You know where I'm going. You know what I'm going to do. Ben Simmons, if you want to play a tournament and get better, TBT. I am absolutely serious. Totally serious. It's in a month's time, July or something.
Yep. I'm sure they could find a way to get him into a team. I'm sure they would make that happen.
And what was Simmons' big problem in the NBA? Making free throws. Well, the Elam ending takes care of that because free throw fouling at the end of games is discouraged. So I'm like, I'm serious. I'm absolutely serious. Ben Simmons at the TBT. Absolutely.
That would be so good.
I've had my rant now. That's it. That's
everything always comes back to TBT when we talk basketball for long enough.
Man, we love TBT and we encourage, we'll try and do something for the TBT this year and work out. But Ben Simmons, the other thing I'd say to advice I'd give to Ben Simmons is, you know what? The money's in the can. It's guaranteed money. You play well, you play poorly, it doesn't matter. You know?
That's exactly what I was thinking too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's like you get paid for the attempt. It's Evel Knievel. Clear the buses, don't clear the buses. Doesn't matter. The tickets are in the kitty. You're done. So
exactly. And so your value goes down. So what? You're only going to get paid $20 million a year now or something like?
Yeah.
At what point is enough enough? Where do you just go, look, it doesn't really matter, does it? Like,
I agree.
I think this is actually the approach that Shaq took to his playing career. He was just like, screw it. I'm just going to have some fun.
Yeah, and it was all the better for it. It was all the better for it.
Yep.
I'll say this, though. This is my crystal ball moment. Simmons is with a company called Clutch.
Right.
Clutch Sports, Rich Paul, LeBron James, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
6 of their 28 clients play for the Lakers. LeBron James, Anthony Davis, you know, most notable among them. It's my prediction that if the Lakers can, they'll broker some deal, whole lot of picks, whole lot of shit, and go from there.
Man, LeBron would look after Simmons.
Oh, for sure. Simmons is a good player. Like, do you think he's a good player? Well, do you think he's a good player?
Yeah, absolutely. Really
and he
good
helps
player.
The Boomers. Just, like, if he plays, the Boomers are better.
Definitely.
For all this talk of him being a choker and all that, he can play basketball really well.
Yeah.
I think we've reached the end.
Kids, go practice your free throws.
There's no better advice. Thanks very much, everyone. Follow us on Twitter. You're smart people. You'll figure out where we're at. Yep. Andrew, you got the last word.
Rate the show. Give us 5 stars.
Yeah.
5 stars.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, Adam Ryan of In All Earnest sent with me a little comment that someone had made on his podcast saying like, oh, I really enjoyed the episode you did with the NBL Pocket podcast host. You know, got a sense of who. So Adam Ryan, thank you for sharing that with me. Made my day. And thank you to the person who wrote it. Don't know their name, but you know, good vibes. Appreciate it.
Nice. All right. Enjoy game 3 of the NBL Grand Final.
Oh, yes. And we'll get, we hope to get Mason on this one from Cool Cats Corner. Subscribe to that podcast if you're a Wildcat fan because you get 10, 15 minutes sort of talking about the game and the series from him.
Yep.
And hopefully we can get him up to game 3. Yeah, he's good. Very good. Yep. Very, very numbers based and all that sort of stuff. So it'd be good stuff.